Okay. So let's start. Namo Vishnu Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Pranamine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Charine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatale. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktavanda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much for joining today's session. We have been discussing from the book Bhaktyaloka by Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Which is a book which is based on the six favorable and six unfavorable items for the practice of bhakti. అత్యాహార ప్రయాసశ్చ ప్రజల్పో నియమాగ్రహ జనసంగశ్చ లౌల్యం చ షడ్విర్ భక్తిర్ వినశ్యతి థింగ్స్ ఆర్ అన్ఫేవరబుల్ అండ్ ఉత్సాహాన్నిశ్చయా ధైర్యా తత్కర్మ ప్రవర్తన సంగత్యాగాత్ సతో వృత్తే షడ్విర్ భక్తిర్ ప్రజతి ద సిక్స్ థింగ్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ ఫేవరబుల్ ద సిక్స్ ఫేవరబుల్ థింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ ది సో బక్షిల భక్తి వినోద్ ఠాకూర్ హాస్ రిటన్ ఎస్సేస్ on these 12 topics, and we have already covered 11 topics, so now we are going to start the 12th topic, which is on sadhu vritti, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Okay, before that, there are some questions in the chat box. I'll be trying to take those questions based on what we saw last week. When we say that we should read only Srila Prabhupada's books and become expert in it, it's not a prejudice, because Acharya's books also help us in increasing devotional service equally, then why current Acharyas write some books and we propagate them everywhere on devotional too? Well, I don't know on what basis they told. Ideally, for us, we should primarily read Srila Prabhupada's books, and when we have acquainted themselves nicely with the mood, essential conclusions of Srila Prabhupada, then based on that, we can study other Acharya's books. So if that was the mood in which it was spoken, then I don't see it as a prejudice, but it is the right understanding. Okay, next question. To say Buddhist is a Mayavadi philosophy, isn't it an attack on religion? Well, if it's a philosophy, that philosophy of Mayavad is wrong. So whether that Mayavad comes in Buddhism or Jainism or whatever, so we don't have anything against the religion, but if it is not talking about, if there is an ideological difference from pure devotional service, then we do not accept it as the highest religion. We accept it as the highest philosophy. So that philosophy, there are less than highest philosophy discussed in the Hindu religion also, less than highest philosophy as discussed in the other religions also. So it is not directly... So one should not attack a religion directly, but one can certainly present what is an incomplete philosophy, what is an incorrect philosophy like that, without directly attacking the religion. Okay, if there are no further discussion points, comments, questions based on our previous session, then we can start today's session. We will discuss on the topic of sadhu vritti. So sadhu vritti means following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So this is the last essay. So we will start this discussion today. Okay. So Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, there are two kinds of sadhus, householders and renunciates. I will separately describe the vritti or occupation of each. Although householders and renunciates have different occupations, they are some they have in common. These will be discussed separately. There are two meanings of the word occupation. Occupation or propensity and lifestyle. So vritti means two meanings. This must be vritti. Okay. So vritti has two meanings. One is propensity, another is lifestyle. Propensity means one's nature or swabhava. Those natural propensities are the living entities, dharma. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Prayaha swabhava vihito nrinam dharmo yuge veda drigbihi smrito rajan pretya cheha sharmakrit. O king, veda drigbir smritaha, those in the knowledge of the Vedas say that in every age dharmaha swabhava vihitaha, an occupation according to one's nature, dharmakrit prayaha, it generally brings happiness. Pretya cha iha. Pretya means in the next life. Iha means in this life. In this life and after death. Okay. So accepting an occupation according to one's nature generally brings happiness in this life and the next life. Okay. So that is what it says. So by passing life in one's natural occupation, one attained devotional service free from the modes of nature. Otherwise, one will fall into irreligion and be unable to make gradual advancement. Let us get back to this. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, let's see what is he quoting. Vritya swabhava kritaya vartana swakarma krit hitva swabhavajam karma shanair nirgunatamya. If anyone shows the symptoms, oh, I'm sorry, I have cut paste the wrong verse. This is 7.11.32. So give me a second. Let's go to 7.11.32. I did a mistake. Give me just 1 second. I will try to correct it. Okay. Yeah, just 1 second. I am almost done. Yes. Okay. So here, he says vritya vritya svabhava kritaya vartamana swakarma krit hitva swabhavajam karma shanay nirgunatamya. If one acts in the profession according to his nature, after gradually giving up his actions according to his nature, he attains the stage beyond the gunas. Nirgunata or the transcendental position means devotion to Krishna. Okay. We will read a few slides and then we will get back. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, tasma dev imam labdhva jnana vijnana sambhavam guna sangam vidhuya mam bhajantu vichakshanaha. Therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allows one to develop knowledge and realization through bhakti, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contamination of the gunas and worship me. It has been ascertained by Lord's use of the two words Nirgunam and Madhupashrayam. These two words are used by the Lord in Bhagavatam, previous to the quoted verse, whatever is performed out of devotion is called Nirguna or transcendental. Rajastam cha abhijayet sattva samsevaya munihi sattvam cha abhijayet yukto nairapekshena shantati. As a preliminary, he should conquer Rajastamas by engaging him only with things in sattva. Then being in devotional service, the sage should also conquer the sattva by indifference towards it arising from the indifference which arises from bhakti. Therefore, people can become free from the modes of nature if they pass their lives dovetailing everything that is sattvic objects, activities, time and place with the devotional service of the Lord. Only human beings are eligible for propensities, mode of goodness, and remaining in that state, they gradually become free from modes. So, here what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentioning. So, he says that there are two kinds of sadhus, householders and renunciates. So, he says that he will describe the vritti or the occupation of each of them. So, he says, there are two meanings of the word vritti. One is propensity and another is lifestyle. Propensity means one's nature, swabhava. So, Bhagavatam says, if a person engages in an occupation according to his nature, then generally it brings happiness in this life and after death. So, he's talking about occupation according to one's nature, which is Varnashrama Dharma. Occupation according to one's Varna. Patanpa Yajanyajan Dana Pratigraha. So, this is for a Brahmana. He studies the Vedas, teaches the Vedas. He performs sacrifices and makes us perform sacrifice. He gives in charity and accepts charity. So, these are the occupations, allowed occupations of a Brahmana. Krishi, Goraksha, Anijyam, Vaishyakarma, Subhavajam. Agriculture, cow protection and business. These are allowed occupations for a Vaishya. Like that, it is described, right? So, therefore, it is mentioned that those who engage in occupations according to their nature, they attain happiness in this life and in next life. Which means it is better one choose occupations which are according to one's nature. Okay, so now here we have to see Krishna says, Shreyan Swadharmo Viguna Paradharmo Swanushtitat Mehi Nidhanam Shreyah Paradharmo Bayavaha. When Arjuna tells Krishna that look, you want me to engage in occupational duties. Okay, he says, I will engage the occupational duty of a Brahmana. I can live my life by begging. Okay. That is all bona fide occupational duty as prescribed in the Vedas. So why did I do that? Krishna says, look, not that, So Krishna says that, look, how to engage in occupational duties, but you have to engage in your own occupational duties. Because as a Brahmana, as a Kshatriya, you have particular deficiency. And only the occupation of a Kshatriya can purify you of those deficiencies. You cannot perform the occupation of a Brahmana and hope to purify yourself of your deficiencies. you have to perform the occupation of a kshatriya only, right? It is better to improperly perform the occupation of a kshatriya than to perfectly perform the occupation of a brahmin. That's what Krishna says. Just like if someone has malaria, right? If someone has malaria and the doctor has given the medicine, let's say falciparum, okay, or you know, they call it, what do you call it? You know, falcigo. Interesting. So the name of the medicine is called as falcigo. So falcigo means falciparum, go away. That is falcigo, but it sounds like false ego, right? So those who have malaria, the doctor says, take 3 times falcigo. And those who have jaundice, the doctor says, 3 times you take one glass of sugarcane juice. So if one who is afflicted with malaria says, look, I will 3 times take sugarcane juice. Allow me to take that medicine. Lord says, no, instead of 3 times false ego, you take 1 time false ego. But you cannot take 3 times sugarcane juice because it is not a cure for your disease. It is not a cure for your disease. It is a cure for someone else's disease. So it does not matter, you know, oh, I can perform the profession very nicely. That's okay. You may be able to perform that profession very nicely, but profession is not meant for your nature. It is not something which is meant for your nature, right? So you cannot perform someone else's occupation. Instead, you do your occupation improperly, incompletely. That is better than doing someone else's occupation perfectly. So therefore, for a person who is qualified for karma, okay, for a person who is qualified karma, if he performs someone else's occupation, then it is simple. Okay. But for a person who is qualified for bhakti, if he performs someone else's occupation, it becomes generally unfavorable for his bhakti. Okay. But there are other considerations. But it is certainly not full. Okay. A favorable occupation is favorable for bhakti. But it is not mandatory. Whereas for one who is on the platform of karma, his own occupation is mandatory. Anyone else's occupation, either he neglects to perform his own occupational duties or he performs someone else's occupational duty, it is sinful outright. Okay. So therefore, when it comes to occupation, it seems to be on a non-negotiable platform for those on the platform of karma. Okay. But it is negotiable on the platform of bhakti. Okay. So generally, for a person on the platform of bhakti, if he performs an occupation according to his nature, then it will keep him peaceful so that he can peacefully perform bhakti. He performs an occupation which is very much different from his nature, it will keep him always disturbed, and he may not be able to only focus on bhakti also, right? So performing an occupation according to one's nature is favorable for bhakti, but it is not a non-negotiable thing. Sometimes one may have a very favorable occupation, but his spiritual master may want him to perform a different occupation because that is the need for his mission. So under such circumstances, the desire of the spiritual master always takes the higher hierarchy. So therefore, if that person may end up doing some occupation which may not be favorable, which may not be according to his nature, not that it will not have any effect on his practice of bhakti, it may have some effect, but the mercy which comes from the spiritual master, because he chooses to act according to his spiritual master's desire, will generally offset that disadvantage may arise out of one practicing an occupation which may be generally unfavorable to his nature, right? So this is something which we have to understand. So here, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning, it is generally good if one performs according to one's nature. By passing life in one's natural occupation, one can attain devotional service free from the mode nature. So what happens? By practicing a natural occupation according to Varnashrama, one becomes purified of the three modes. Okay. The anarthana vritti happens very fast. After that, when one takes up the Krishna consciousness, then anarthana vritti is already accomplished, one can progress very fast. That is what it is. Otherwise, you cannot say that prior practice of Varnashrama Dharma and prior practice of one's occupation is very much critical or important to take. It is a prerequisite for taking up to bhakti. No, it is not a prerequisite for taking up to bhakti. If you make it a prerequisite to take up to bhakti, then that bhakti is not ahaituki bhakti. Okay. Otherwise, one will fall into irreligion and be unable to make gradual advancement. So otherwise, if one prior to taking up to bhakti has been performing unfavorable occupation, then he will accumulate lot of impious karma and impious impressions, which may create some obstacles to his progressing on the path of bhakti, but not for his taking up to this practice of bhakti. Right. So it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Vritya Swabhava Kritaya Vartamana Swakarma Krit Hitva Swabhavajam Karma Shanair Nirgunatamya. So he says that if one acts in the profession according to his nature, after gradually giving up his actions according to his nature, attains the stage beyond the gunas. So this is talking about how by practice of Nishkama Karma Yoga, one gradually gets purified and comes to the platform of jnana. That's what this is. Okay, by practice of Nishkama Karma Yoga, one becomes purified, and by becoming purified, one attains the stage of jnana. Okay. So, which is beyond the gunas. Okay. So, nirgunata, the transcendental position, means devotion to Krishna. But one cannot say that by performing one's profession, one becomes qualified for Krishna. No, that is not what it means. Right. So, then that kind of bhakti is not ahituki bhakti. So, one should not understand these statements to mean that. Because if you take it that way, then it is outright apasiddhanta. And certainly Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur would not write anything which is apasiddhanta. Right? As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allows one to develop knowledge and realization through bhakti, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contamination of the gunas and worship me. So by worshipping Krishna, one naturally frees oneself of all contamination. மாம்சையோ அவ்யபிச்சாரேன பக்தியோகேன சேவத்தே சகுணான் சமதீதே தான் பிரம்ம பூயாய கல்பதே. இட் ஹாஸ் பீன் அசர்டைன் பை த லார்ட்ஸ் யூஸ் ஆஃப் த டூ வேர்ட்ஸ் நிர்குணம் அண்ட் வாஷ்ரம். தீஸ் டூ வேர்ட்ஸ் ஆர் யூஸ்ட் பை த லார்ட் இன் ஸ்ரீமத் பாகவதம். Just previous quoted verse that whatever is performed out of devotion is called nirguna or transcendental. So the Lord says, as a preliminary, he should conquer rajas and tamas by engaging himself only with things in sattva. Then by being fixed in devotional service, the sage should conquer sattva by indifference towards it arising from bhakti. So basically he says that one should in the initial stages endeavor to situate oneself on the platform of sattva, and a lifestyle which is favorable. Therefore people can become free from the modes of nature if they pass their lives dovetailing everything that is sattvic, objects, active, etc. with the devotional service of the Lord. Okay, so when they dovetail everything sattvic with the devotional service of the Lord, then they transcend the three modes. So Bailey here he says, you can transcend the three modes by first transcending the two modes. And in order to transcend the first two modes, a favorable lifestyle of sattva is essential. That is what he is telling here. Okay. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions based on what we have discussed till now? There are some questions in the chat box. If someone is performing an occupation very nicely, then isn't it his nature? Well, over a long period of time, if one is able to perform an occupation nicely, with skill and with absorption, then it is likely that may be an occupation according to his nature. But sometimes, out of, like in the case of Arjuna, Arjuna felt, I think I'll be better off begging than fighting. That's a momentary judgment of Arjuna out of his deep distress in having killed his own relatives. So that is a very, you can say, that is a very momentary, you can say, desire that Arjuna gets. It is not a, so if he had taken up to begging, the profession of begging, very quickly he would have become frustrated. So therefore, if one is able to perform a particular occupation skillfully and with great skill and satisfaction over a long period of time, then it is very likely that occupation is according to his nature. Like that. Okay, another question. After dovetailing comes Yukta Vairagya, which is transcending the three modes. Yes, first comes dovetailing, then comes transcending the three modes. So basically here, what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is indicating is that this will become a little bit more clear. It is better to even devotees in the early stages of Krishna consciousness, they should adapt certain aspects of the Varnashrama system, especially the occupations, because generally they will turn out to be favorable for one's devotional service also. That is what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling. So some, because it is jnana karma di anavritam, okay, bhakti should not be covered by karma. It is not jnana karma di shunyam. It is not that bhakti should be completely free of karma. So certain aspects of the varnashrama system, like occupations, if they are favorable, they generally are favorable for bhakti. But it is not as non-negotiable as on the platform of karma. It is very much negotiable, and it has controlled by and subordinated by the principles of bhakti. Anukulyasya sankalpo pratikulyasya varjanam. That is the principle. And generally, if you apply that principle to occupations of devotees, you will see that generally occupations according to one's nature turns out to be anukul for one's bhakti also. So therefore, based on the principle of anukulyasya sankalpo pratikulyasya janam, based on that principle, if one chooses an occupation which is in line with one's nature, that choice of an occupation is according principles of bhakti only. Okay. So this is where the overlap is. So generally, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, performance of an occupation according to one's nature is very favorable for bhakti. That is what he is indicating here. Right? Okay. There are some questions, more questions in the chat box. If one performs action with absorption, then there is a chance that he will be less absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Well, no. So what if one has no absorption in the occupational duty that he is performing? Then he will be doing it very, you can say, ineffectively. So therefore, he has to absorb himself in fixing that problem. That will take more time, more energy and absorption. So therefore, this is not a... So if one is able to very easily perform one's occupation, then what will happen? That the ability to perform that occupation will become his second nature. So without even thinking much about it, while meditating on Krishna, he can very easily perform that occupation. So therefore, it is not true that if one can perform one's occupation with lot of absorption, one will not be able to think about Krishna. If one is performing that occupation as a service to Krishna, then absorption in that occupation is as good as serving Krishna. There is nothing wrong in that. Okay. If whatever that occupation is performed for the service of Krishna, then that occupation is actually devotional service. It is a secondary limb of devotional service. So therefore, performing that occupation with absorption is performing bhakti only. Right? And if he is able to perform that occupation with absorption, then he will complete that occupational duties very fast. And if he is able to complete his occupational duty fast, then he will get more time to engage in the primary limbs of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smarnam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, etc. Okay. Okay, there is another question. Someone who has been making leather shoes as a family occupation since long, but after coming to Krishna consciousness, he is thinking it's not favorable, but he cannot give it up also, as he is getting good income from leathers rather than other materials. He is now an initiated devotee. So what should happen? Okay. So now, this is where one has to see. So I hope you understood the situation. His traditional family business was making leather shoes. So he has gotten into that same business, and because he has been trained in it since a young age, it comes to him very naturally. But now that he has become a devotee, he understands that these leather shoes are made not from naturally dead cows, but cows are killed to make these shoes, or some animals are killed to make these shoes. So what should he do? Because, you know, he's getting a good income, but when he uses other materials to make those shoes, he's not getting a good income. What should he do? So now here is where you have to see how much. So if you are the person who is guiding that person, then you have to see where is his faith, how much is his faith, and how much is his attachment to his occupation, salary, and everything. Okay. So if you tell him this is outright sin, you have to give it up immediately, then you are really putting him to a corner if he does not have an alternative, a reasonably good alternative source of income. Then you are really pushing him to a zone where he will have to choose between his livelihood and Krishna consciousness. We should never push a devotee in that direction where we make, you know, choose Krishna consciousness or your livelihood. It's not like that. He can choose both. Just that his livelihood may not be very favorable for Krishna consciousness, but at least he is practicing Krishna consciousness. But if we push him to a corner, force him, bully him, and that, you know, this is very unfavorable, you will doom in your devotional service and all such kind of things. When you see that he is very clearly at his occupation, then he will start avoiding devotees association, because he does not want to give up his occupation. But at the same time, devotees are intimidating him. So he will start avoiding devotees association, because anyway, he is not willing to give up his occupation. So therefore, if you see that the person is unwilling to give up his occupation, don't worry. Let him at least practice Krishna consciousness. That is what I would say. Because there is a... So dealing with situations sensitively is very important. We should not push any devotee to a situation where he has to choose between his occupation and Krishna consciousness. So ultimately, livelihood will always come first. Okay. But what you can tell him is that, look, Prabhu, in the long run, this patient may not be very favorable for your Krishna consciousness, but you don't necessarily have to give it up immediately. But please have it at the back of your mind. And please start thinking in terms of, in the long run, if there is a possibility, can you look for some other occupation? Or you can sit with him and maybe rather than putting all the burden on him, you can tell, Prabhu, what are the other materials that you can use to make shoes? Like that, if you approach that person in a way that you are really genuinely willing to help that person, then just judge him and tell him that what you are doing is wrong, you will be doomed. And only that we have to say, we are not showing any interest in genuinely helping that person, then that person may run away from us. So everyone has attachments. You have to see how much that person is willing to come out of his comfort zone. So therefore, sensitivity is very important. Sensitivity in dealings. You know, we have to deal with this very sensitively. Be sensitive of their attachments. Because to tell someone to change one's profession is very easy. But for a person who has been engaged in that profession for generations, you know, that is like a serious change that you are suggesting. You know, they would not have learned anything else other than that profession. and they are like the you know, unquestionable leaders in that profession. But if they have to change a profession, they have to learn everything from the scratch. And that is not a problem just for them. That will create serious problems for their whole family. So one has to be very, very sensitive to all these things. And gradually and with lot of sensitivity and compassion, one should approach such things. So that we don't alienate that person and doesn't feel, oh, these devotees will keep on judging me for my profession. So I would rather stay away from devotees. So if we push him in that direction, then it is a great disservice actually. So we have to be careful, you know. There may be, see, we not that you have to pull down the gold standard. The gold standard may be there. Okay. But if the person is here, we don't have to necessarily pull down the gold standard or just tell him, look, this is the gold standard, this is the gold standard. But rather help catch hold of that person's hand and try to help him take one step towards the gold standard. And that is success. Rather than intimidate him by telling this is the gold standard, this is the gold standard. When you don't give any realistic help to gradually elevate him to the gold standard. So therefore, it's important. Sensitivity in suggesting solutions is very important actually. One should be very very considerate to understand that person's attachments and things like that. Anything else before we move forward? Any questions, comments? Okay, if there's none, then we will continue our discussion. Toshila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the general densities of human beings in the mode of goodness are described in Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. So there are, I think, 30 qualities of a person in the mode of goodness. So one should try to come to that position of mode of goodness. Some endeavor has to be there, right? So he says satya. Satya means speaking the truth without distortion or deviation. Of course, all these qualities should generally be practiced. And very rarely, under rare circumstances, exhibiting these qualities may become unfavorable for devotion. Sometimes, very, very rarely. Like someone is coming to kill a cow and the cow has entered into your house and he is asking, is the cow inside? So you can't say, okay, we'll always tell the truth and tell the truth. So under very such rare circumstances, one may tell a lie for a higher cause. But in general, one should not be habituated to telling lies for no reasons. That is unfavorable for devotee service. Daya, sympathy to everyone suffering. This is very important for devotional service. So, there are two things. Okay. Compassion as an act and compassion as a quality. Okay. So, compassion as an act we can perform based on our value system. Okay. We know that to act compassionately is favorable for my progress in Krishna consciousness. Even though we may not feel compassionate towards a particular living entity or towards living entities in general, but still we may act compassionately because we understand that it is favorable for my Krishna consciousness. So, compassionate acts can be performed based on our value system, but compassion as a quality we can develop only by progressing on the path of devotion. Okay. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasate sura. Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna manoratena sati davato bahihi. So, we don't have to be compassionate to act compassionately. We can act compassionately understanding that it is favorable for our devotion. Even though we may not have developed compassion as a quality. Right? Soft speech, like, you know, speaking softly. That may not be our quality. But if we understand that it is favorable for devotional service, then being inspired by the pure devotional value system, we can talk soft even though we may not have developed the quality of soft speech like that. Similarly, tapaha, austerity, such as observing fast at least twice in a month on the day of Ekadashi. Right? So this is favorable for consciousness. So even though fasting may not be something which naturally comes to us, but still, we can try to do it because it is favorable for Krishna consciousness. Shaucha, cleanliness, that is bathing regularly at twice a day, morning and evening, and remembering to chant the name of the Lord. So this is internal cleanliness and external cleanliness. Titiksha, toleration, being uneducated by seasonal changes or inconvenient circumstances. So, when one becomes progress on the path of devotional service, tolerance as a virtue automatically develops. When the influence of Rajogun and Tamogun subsides, and when the influence of Sattvam's very prominent, automatically one develops tolerance as a quality. But toleration as an act can be performed even though we may not have the quality, because we understand, because we value you. Okay. So we understand that if I tolerate, it is good for my devotional service. So we try to tolerate. But in doing that, when we progress the path of devotional service, and when the influence of Rajogun and Tamogun come down, automatically one becomes tolerant. One develops tolerance as a quality itself. Okay. So, Iksha means distinguishing between bad and good. So, these are all what he is telling is the general propensities of human beings in the mode of goodness. These are the general propensities. That's what he is telling. Shama means control of the mind. Dhamma means control of the senses. Ahimsa means non-violence. Brahmacharya means continence or abstaining from misuse of one's semen. Not indulging sex with woman other than one's wife, and not having sex with one's own wife when sex is forbidden, like during the period of menstruation. Tyaga, giving in charity at least 50% of one's income. Swadhyaya, reading of transcendental literatures like Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Ramayana and Mahabharata. Saralata, simplicity, freedom from mental duplicity. Santosha, being satisfied with that which is available without severe endeavor. Samadrishi Janera Seva, rendering service to saintly ones who make no distance between one living being and another, and who see every living being as a spirit soul. So serving those saintly people is considered to be nature of a person in mode of goodness, or the action of a devotee who is aspiring to progress in the path of devotional service. So as a sadhana one may do. Namya cheshta haite nivritti, not taking part in so-called philanthropic activities. Viparyaya iha iksha, distinguishing unnecessary activities. Viparyaya iha, means unnecessary activities, activities which give contrary results. So one should be able to see which are activities which are contrary to our attaining our goal. Vritta alapa nivritti, being grave and silent. Vritta means useless, alapa means talking. Nivritti means to stop useless talk. That is one of the qualities. Atma vimarshanam, research into the self to whether one is the body or the soul. Atma vimarshanam. Annadira vibhaga, equal distribution of food and drink. Okay. So these are some of the natural qualities of a person on the stage of goodness. Right? Sakala loka, sakala loke bhagavat sambandha buddhi, acting all living entities as related to the Lord. Shravanam as well, and along with that, vanam, kirtanam, smaranam, seva, ijja. Seva means service, ijja means worship. Dati, offering obeisances. Asya, accepting the service. Sakyam, to consider as a friend. Atmanivedanam, surrendering one's own whole self to the Supreme Lord. So these 30 items are said to be qualities in the mode of goodness, or those in mode of goodness are said to possess these qualities. So according to the differentiations of these 30 characteristics, the four varnas, that is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, and the four ashramas, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas, are born. So according to the differentiations, these 30 characteristics, you have the four varnas and four ashramas. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Bhikshor dharmaha shamo himsa tapa iksha vanauka grihino bhuta rakshejya dvijasya acharya sevanam. So this is sannyasi, this is vanaprastha, this is Grihastha, and this is Brahmachari. Okay. So what are the qualities or duties of a sannyasi or a shamo himsa, ahimsa? Equanimity and non-violence. Okay. And what are the qualities of a vanaprastha? Tapa iksha. Tapa, austerity. And iksha means ability to see the difference between body and soul. And for a grihastha, bhuta raksha and ijya. Bhuta raksha means giving shelter to jivas. And second is ijya, means performing sacrifices. And for a brahmachari, acharya sevanam, serving the guru. Okay. So, like that, it is mentioned. The life occupations of the four varnas are stated as follows. Study, teaching, worship, teaching, worship, giving charity and accepting charity. Patan, patan, yajan, jan, dana, pratigraha. These six are the brahmanas' occupations. Of these, they should maintain their lives by teaching, teaching worship and accepting worship. Okay. So these are the occupational duties of a Brahmana. someone has Brahminical nature, or if he has the nature of being Brahminical, then these occupations are the suitable even for bhakti. But this is not non-negotiable. While engaging in this occupation will purify. So the difference between for a person on the platform of karma and for a person the platform of bhakti. For a person at the platform of karma, if he does a favorable occupation, it leads to purification of heart. But if a person on the platform of bhakti, if he performs a favorable occupation, it makes his practice of bhakti easier. That's all. So it will make his practice of the easier. So the Kshatriya's occupations are protecting the praja by punishing miscreants and maintaining the life by taxation. So this is the occupation of a Kshatriya. So he gives protection to his subjects and he accepts taxes from them. Krishi, Goraksha, Vanijyam, farming, protecting cows and business are the Vaishya's occupation. Only serving Brahmanas is the livelihood of the Shudras. Of course, elsewhere it is mentioned that they serve the other three Varnas. They are the occupation of or the means of livelihood for the Shudras. The traditional occupation of those who are lower than Shudras are their means of livelihood. So for those who are lower than Shudras, the Antyajas or the outcasts, what is their means of livelihood? Their traditional occupation which they have been practicing for generations, that is their means of life. So from all these conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam, it should be understood that performing devotional service to Sri Hari is the only purpose of life. There is no other purpose. The purpose of life is to perform devotional service to Lord Hari. But unless one makes the gross and subtle bodies favorable to devotional service, one cannot engage in such. So one needs to make one's gross body and subtle body favorable for performing devotional service. And one way of making the gross body and subtle body favorable for performing devotional service is to have favorable occupational engagements. So by favorable occupational engagements, one's gross body and subtle body becomes peaceful and then it becomes easy to engage in devotional service. But as we discussed before, that acceptance of that favorable occupation or any other element of the traditional Varnashrama system should be subservient to the principle of Anukulyasya Sankalpo Pratisya Varjanam. Okay, that is very critical. So he says there is a need for some arrangements in order to attain a favorable condition in these two bodies. So to have a favorable gross body and a favorable subtlety for practicing bhakti, some arrangements have to be made. You know, how do you make your gross body and subtle body favorable bhakti? So he says, first, in order to maintain the gross body, there is a need to accumulate a house, household items, grains and drinks. In order to maintain the gross body, the house, you need household items, you need some grains, you need some drinks. For the prosperity of the subtle body, one needs proper knowledge and proper occupation. So if one is properly occupied, then one becomes full and it is easier to practice bhakti. So in order to make bodies completely favorable for devotional service, there is a need to situate them above the modes of nature. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything you want to share as Ag? Okay. If there is no discussion points, then we will continue our discussion. Just give me 1 second. Okay. Okay, there is one hand up. Yes, Mother Gail.
Yeah, so would you say that the main reason that we should engage ourselves according to our propensity is so that the not being engaged according to our propensity won't serve as a distraction to our ability to focus on Krishna consciousness? I don't know if you can hear me properly because I'm in the car.
Yeah, that is true. Because if you are not properly engaged, we will be distracted and dissatisfied, and that will distract us from our practice of Krishna consciousness. So you see, a person on the platform of karma has a favorable occupation because he wants to purify his heart and he does not want to accrue sinful karma. So with that purpose, he accepts a favorable occupation. Whereas a devotee, he accepts a favorable occupation according to his nature so that his gross body and subtle body are favorably situated. You know, he feels satisfied and absorbed and less distracted so that he can peacefully practice Krishna consciousness. So both of them may end up choosing the same occupation, but the basis of choice, particular occupation by the devotee, is for the consideration of developing a favorable gross and subtle body should be favorable for devotional service. Whereas for a person on the platform of karma, his choice of the same occupation is so that he does not want to accumulate impious karma. He wants to purify his heart so that he can become qualified for the platform of jnana. So this consideration defines one choice of the choice of an occupation as a whether as a karmic consideration or a devotion consideration.
Okay. And also, you know, this Gita verse has always been, you know, unclear for me, that it is better to perform your own duty improperly than someone else's duty properly. So why is that actually the case? You know, because if you're able to do someone else's, I mean, if you're not able to do your own duty properly, then how is it even your duty, you know? Especially if you're able to do someone else's duty properly, it seems like that one should be your duty because that's what you know how to do.
Well, when Krishna tells this, this is a very hypothetical situation. Only from a very short-sighted point of view and for a very short time will that person be actually able to do someone else's duty properly. Thus, in the long run, it will not be sustainable because it is against its nature. It is like someone starting to run a marathon. Okay, you know, I don't know if you have ever had an experience of running a marathon race. In the beginning, you are supposed to maintain a very even, moderate tempo while running so that you can sustain it throughout the race. So, but sometimes beginners, they think that, you know, they don't understand the science of long distance running. So what they do is they start sprinting in the beginning. You know, they run really fast. I think, wow, I have already left these pros behind. You know, I am going to win the race very fast. And then they are sprinting and sprinting and sprinting, looking around their shoulders, and they are feeling very happy. But within a very short time, they lose all their energy and they stop. So it may seem like, you know, this in the beginning stage, if you are doing someone else's duty, which is not according to your nature, it may seem like in the beginning that you can perform it nicely, but over the longer time, you know, you will realize that it is difficult for you to sustain it. So therefore, when Krishna says that it is better to do your own job improperly than to do someone else's job, this is a very specific case, Arjuna's case, where he, out of his family affection, he thinks, I'll be better off begging. Okay. But that evaluation of that situation is not according to his nature, but it is according to the specific circumstance that he was in. But in the long run, it would have been actually difficult for him to sustain his livelihood through begging, because it is not according to his nature. Only a temporary circumstance is making him feel that way. So what Krishna is telling, look, don't make decisions based on these temporary considerations. Think long term. Your actual nature is to fight. So don't give up that occupation. In the long run, you will not be able to sustain it. So generally, if someone... So how do you know that occupation is favorable for that person? For in the long run, for a long time, he can do it sustainably. Even though in the initial stage, one may think that, oh, I can do this better. But it is not like that. And also, this is one thing.
Oh, wait, Prabhu, before you go to the next thing. So a person who, I mean, that was a really beautiful answer and the most satisfying one I've heard so far. But also the person who can go the long haul, right? Mm-hmm. But they're doing it. So when we say that person is doing it improperly,
mm-hmm.
I mean, over the long haul, it shouldn't remain, you know, substandard. It should improve over time, right? For the other person for whom it is his nature, you know, for the person whom it is his nature, I mean, it shouldn't remain.
That's what when Krishna says, it is better you do your own duty improperly. But so that's what, if it is actually his duty, it may be initially improper, but over a period of time, he will start doing it properly also.
Okay. Very
but
good.
Another uh-huh. consideration is that sometimes someone may have the skill to do a particular job, but they may not have the essential qualities which are also needed, right? For example, for a Kshatriya, fighting skills is not the only quality that is needed. There are other essential qualities, you know, the desire to give protection and having the courage to, not run away from the battle, you know, a genuine capacity and desire to give protection to the subjects. These are additional qualities other than the skill sets alone. So someone has the skill sets, but he may not have these essential qualities. So if only possessing the skill set and not the qualities is also a disqualification for such a person.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, like for example, persons Dronacharya refused to teach Ekalavya, you know, the science of archery.
Yes.
So that was because he found in him a very skillful person, but having no quality. He was not having the right qualities of a Kshatriya. So he would not, he can fight nicely. He has the skill of archery, but it is not just sufficient to have that skill, but no, you should have the ethics and the willing to follow the rules of conduct of warfare, a desire to serve and protect your subjects. So if you don't have all these things, you know, not everyone who is a good street fighter is, you know, is a Kshatriya. So
right.
Kshatriya. So therefore someone may have some aspect of a particular skill, a particular which may be one small subset of a greater set of qualities and ideals which are needed for a particular varna. So therefore, it is not just, you know, ease with which someone is able to perform an occupation. You know, that is certainly one of the very important considerations. There are other considerations also.
Yeah, beautiful, Prabhu. Beautiful, so nice. Just one other thing on this point.
I'll just give you one example.
Oh.
For example, what this Ekalavya had done in order to show off, you know, his skills in archery. Generally, you don't show off your skills in archery to your guru, right? So what he did, he actually, a dog was barking nonstop. So he took arrows from his quiver and from a distance shot multiple arrows, and in various different ways he shut the mouth of the dog so that it would not bark.
My God.
So this shows exceptional skills actually at archery, but no
compassion.
Yeah, but no Kshatriya would show these kind of unnecessary violence to just show off his skills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these are like essential things. It's not just ability to perform a particular service or a particular occupation. One should also have the qualities needed for that particular varna. So then one can choose like that.
Very nice, Prabhu. And one other thing I heard about this verse is that, you know, for those of us on the path of bhakti, this verse mm-hmm. is also saying that, you know, the objective is not to do something properly or perfectly, is to follow the order of guru, right? So it's better that you follow the order of guru rather mm-hmm. than try and do something perfectly, because doing something perfectly is not the point. You know, surrender is the point.
True.
So
true.
That was
the point here. So generally, there may not be a sense of conflict between the instructions of the guru and something which a person does. There may be some cases the guru may give direct instructions as to this is how you should live your life, these are the principles, but within those generic instructions there may always be a choice of, you know, choosing activities which may So the choice may be in the hands of the practitioner. So in such case, what kind of activities or occupations he should choose? That principle is given here. But if there is a stage where the guru tells, okay, perform this occupation, then one should not say that occupation is not according to my nature. I will perform this occupation which is according to my nature. So then it is wrong, because that choice should always be subordinated to the principles of bhakti. So the direct principles of devotional, the devotional principles always come higher in the hierarchy. So when there is a conflict, you choose the devotional system. But when there is not a conflict, when we don't see a conflict, so then you can also choose, you can have these additional considerations. That's what, this will come little later, but that's the principle.
Okay, and just one last thing, Prabhu, is, you know, especially for those on the path of karma, what is it about doing activities according to your own propensity that purifies you of, I guess, karma or entangling karma? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What is...
So what is it? What is this whole logic being doing some activity according to my nature? How will it disentangle me?
Yeah.
Right? What is this system?
Right? Yeah.
So the point is how the Vedic scriptures have designed this gradual path of purification is that they allow you to perform occupations and duties according to your nature, but because which you would anyway do, but because you are doing those activities under the subordination of the scriptures, therefore, because you are acting according to the subordination of the scriptures, you will be poor. But you will continue performing those activities because they are according to your nature, and you will feel satisfied performing those activities according to your nature. So because you are also satisfied, you will not mind continuously subordinating your desires to the injunctions of the scriptures. And because you are consistently subordinating yourself to the injunctions of the scriptures, from that comes purification. From performing activities according to your nature comes satisfaction and impetus to continue in that direction. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make sense?
Yeah, and that means no karma, right? Not just good karma.
Yeah, so it will be good karma if you have material desires to accomplish through your practice of Varnashrama. But if you have transcended the stage of aspiration for material desires, and if you start aspiring for liberation, then you will not get any good karma or bad karma. But if you have desire for some material fits through practice of your Varnashrama duties, then you will get pious karma.
Oh, that's interesting. So two people, even though they have the same Varna, you know, just because of the difference in their aspirations, they will get different results, even though they're both acting according to their particular Varna.
Varna, yeah, true.
Okay, wow, nice. Such wonderful answers, Prabhu. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna, thank you. Okay, let us continue. So he says, in order to make the bodies completely favorable for devotional service, there is a need to situate them above the modes of nature. Right? So he says, due to the results of fruitive activities from time immemorial, whatever nature and desires a living entity develops is certainly a mixture of goodness, passion, and ignorance. We all know this, right? By first enriching the mode of goodness, one should diminish and defeat passion and ignorance and make goodness prominent. When the mode of goodness is completely under the control of devotional service, then it becomes nirguna. By following this gradual process, one's mind, body, mind, and environment becomes fit for devotional service. So, while we saw that the three modes affect two things. The three modes may affect one's faith. The three modes may affect one's swabhava. Okay. So, when faith is in pure devotional service, it is already nirguna. But it is not just sufficient to have nirguna faith with saguna swabhava. Okay. A swabhava or a nature which affects our subtle body and gross body, if they are under the influence of the three modes, especially the lower modes of rajogun and tamogun, then it will cause a very serious tug of war between the nirguna faith and the saguna swabhava. Okay. So if in the saguna swabhava there is sattva, there is rajas, and there is tamas. Sattva is very light and doubtable in Krishna consciousness. Rajas and tamas are obstacles to Krishna consciousness. So they will pull in the opposite direction. So he says, yes, while by practice of bhakti, certainly your swabhava will become, your rajogun and tamogun will become destroyed gradually. That is very important. That is very good. But having said that, you should also make a conscious choice of activities, environment, etc., which are not
more surcharged with sattva guna. Okay. So, that is very critical. That's what he says here.
So, yes, by practice of bhakti, automatically your influence of rajogun and tamogun will go down. But having said that, in order to practice bhakti properly, so you cannot, it is very unfavorable if you have an environment which is surcharged with rajogun and tamogun. So, therefore, while one is practicing bhakti, one should also try to accept environment and other such things, occupation, etc., which is low on rajogun and tamogun, so that, you know, bhakti does not have to work over time. Okay. Like that. So, he says, there is a need for varnashrama dharma. While a human remains the stage of piety and impiety that are born of his nature, the main purpose of varnashrama dharma is this. By gradually following varnashrama dharma, a human being will become eligible to perform devotional service. Right? So, this morning in Chaupati, I was giving a class on the same point about what is varnashrama dharma. So, generally, words have multiple meanings. Many times they have contextual meanings. Okay. So, the word varnashrama can have different meanings in different contexts. The word varnashrama dharma can mean just social order. Okay. The word Varnashrama Dharma may indicate a value system, as in Dharmasya Sankalpo Adharmasya Vardhanam. Okay. Accept anything that is according to your dharma of your varna and ashrama, you accept it. Anything which is against your varna and ashrama, then you reject it. Okay. So the word varnashrama can mean a social order. The word varnashrama can mean a value system. The word varnashrama can mean occupations. Okay. Patan patan yajanyajan dana pratigraha for brahmanas, krishi goraksha vanidyam for vaishyas, paricharya yatmakam karma, serving the other three varnas, that is, that may be the occupation for shudras, like that. Or the word varnashrama may refer to rituals, the essential rituals which has been the yagyas, particular yagyas for particular varnas and ashramas that has been prescribed in the Dharma Shastras. So the word varnashrama can mean any of these things, or all of these things, or some of these things. So I was discussing this morning that whether varnashrama is needed for those outside the realm of devotional service is very clear. All acharyas are very unequivocal in their presentation. They say, yes, varnashrama is needed if one has not reached the qualification for bhakti. So there is no ambiguity there. But when it comes to sadhakas, practitioners of devotional service, there seems to be some ambiguity. Because Rupa Goswami and others are very categorical. Varnashrama is not needed for practicing bhakti. But having said that, sometimes Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they seem to indicate here, if you see, varnashrama is needed for practitioners till they reach the stage of bhava. So now this seems to be totally contradicting. While Rupa Goswami says, ananushtanato dosho bhakti anganam prajayate na karmanam akaranad esha bhakti adhikarinah iti vaishnava shastranam rahasyam tadvidam matam. The opinion of those who have understood the essential conclusions of the bhakti shastras is that for a devotee to neglect performing the limbs of devotional service is a fault, but he is not at all at fault for neglecting to perform the duties of his karma, varna and ashrama. But here Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling, no, a devotee has to perform the duties of varna and ashrama because it is very favorable, and till he reaches, later he will tell, till he reaches the stage of bhava, one should practice. So now, how do you reconcile this? Is this actually contradiction? So we should understand that, you know, when it comes to something as essential as practice, the essential do's and don'ts of bhakti, acharyas will not have different opinions there. Maybe the problem is with our inability to reconcile the apparent difference. So we are trying to reconcile it now. As I mentioned, a particular word may have different meanings at different times. Okay. So, for example, the word the Varnashrama Dharma or Varnashrama can mean the social order of a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyasa. It may just be the social order. Or Varnashrama can mean the value system, the basis of acceptance and rejection of occupation, things, association, etc. Or Varnashrama can refer to Varnashrama occupations. Okay. So, or Varnashrama can just refer to the rituals or the, you know, the various kinds of yajnas. So when it comes, Rupa Goswami telling, no, devotee is not at fault for not performing his Varnashrama duties. What it could mean is that it could mean any of these things. He is not at fault means he is not karmically responsible. It could mean that, right? So if a devotee does not accept that social order, it may be somewhat unfavorable for his devotional service. But is he karmically responsible? No. He may not accept the occupation which is favorable for him. It may be somewhat unfavorable for his practice of devotional service. But is he karmically responsible? Like a person on the platform karma, he gets sinful reactions for not performing his own duties. So he will get karmic reactions. So he will get bad karma. But for a devotee, he will not get bad karma. So when Rupa Goswami says he is not at fault for neglecting to perform the duties of Varna and Ashrama, it may just mean that he is not karmically responsible. That's all. So where it might mean that Rupa Goswami is not talking about favorable or unfavorable, he is just talking about karmic responsibility, which is correct. Right? And here, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about favorability. He is also not talking about karmic responsibility here. Right? So he is talking about favorability. So amongst these four things, social order can be accepted. Right? The social order can be accepted if it is favorable. One need not just like that reject it. Okay? So, and the occupations also, the occupations also, generally, the occupations according to our Varna may be favorable occupations. Okay. Yeah. So there may be the occupations which are favorable for according to one's Varna may actually be occupations which are favorable for healthy cultivation of devotional service also. Right? But certainly not the value system. We cannot accept that value system. Of anything which is dharma, we will accept. Anything which is not dharma, we will not accept. No. That we don't accept. And we cannot accept the rituals also as it is. No. But if some act of the social order is favorable for bhakti, it is just like you have a cupboard or a locker which was used for storing liquor, let's say. And you want you can get that locker, clean it nicely, and use it for storing Srimad Bhagavatam. There is nothing wrong in that. Right? So similarly, some social order, some aspects of the social order, if it is already established and if it can be dovetailed in bhakti, we may accept. We don't just like that reject it. We don't have to. And similarly, occupations also, generally, the Varnashram occupations are according to one's nature, and engagement in occupations according to one's nature is generally favorable for bhakti also, one may accept. Okay? But we certainly do not accept the value system of Varnashrama, and we certainly do not accept all those rituals because they may not be favorable for bhakti. Right? So therefore, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur says Varnashrama is needed, what he means is those occupations are very favorable, the social order may also be favorable. Don't abruptly give it up. That is what he means. And when Srila Rupa Goswami says, no, Varnashram from the beginning should be given up. So he means the value system of Varnashram should be given up. The rituals of Varnashram be given up. And Varnashram as a prescribed duty. One should not think the Varnashram duties as one's prescribed duty. No. That is not acceptable. It may be something favorable, but it is not a prescribed duty for devotees. But it is prescribed duty for those on the platform of karma, not for devotees. Right? So he says, Sriman Mahaprabhu has quoted the following verses from Srimad Bhagavatam to Sanatana Goswami. Okay. So yes, Mukabahur Padebya Purushasya Ashramayi Saha Chatvaro Jagire Varna Guner Vipradaya Pradak Yesham Purusham Sakshad Atma Prabhavam Ishwaram Na Bhajanti Avajanantana Drashtara Patantyadaha. Each of the four social orders headed by the Brahmanas was born through different combinations of the modes of jagat, from the face, arms, thighs and feet of the Supreme Lord in His universal form, along with the ashramas. So different varnas and different ashramas were born from the different bodily parts of the Supreme Lord. If any of the members of the four varnas and ashramas fail to worship the Lord and thus disrespect the Lord, they will fall down from their ashram or their varna. Okay. So, like that. So he says that the main purpose of Varnashram Dharma is this. By gradually following Varnashram Dharma, a human being will become able to perform devotional service. Actually, of course, we should understand this. This does not mean that practicing Varnashram is a prerequisite for bhakti. It's just that there is this Varnashram occupations and social order are favorable. They may be favorable for creating a favorable social system for the practice of bhakti, but it is not absolutely mandatory. Okay. Yeah, just give me 1 second. Just give me. I am sorry. Okay. So he says, Sriman Mahaprabhu has quoted the four verses. Anyways. So now he quotes this conversation between Ramananda Rai and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, oh Ramananda Rai, tell me what is the highest goal of life. Ramananda Rai said, Varnashrama. Varnashrama Charavata Purushena Parappuman Vishnur Aradhyate Panta Nanyatat Toshakarnam. So he said, the Supreme Lord Vishnu is to be worshipped by man through the duties of Varnashrama. There is no other path for satisfying the Lord. So this is what the Vishnu Puran says. And Ramananda Rai said, oh, this is the highest thing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected this process as external and requested him to give a higher conclusion. Eho bahya age kaho ar. So now, what was the purport of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's statement? purport. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the purport of what did he mean that eho bahya aage kaho, this is external, go further. So what is the purport of this? He says, so he is, this is the purport. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu meant for Ramananda, Varnashrama Dharma is meant to regulate the gross and subtle bodies. If someone is satisfied only in that, without engaging in devotional service of Krishna, then what is his gain? Therefore, although the process of Varnashrama is the only means of purification for a conditioned soul, still it is external only. As stated in Bhagavatam, Dharma Svanushita Pumsam Vishvaksena Kakasuyamar Na Utpadaye Dediratim Shramayiva Yikyavanam. Varnashrama Dharma, because it does not produce attraction for the topics of the Lord, is only wasted effort. So therefore, if one practices only the limbs of Varnashram without practicing bhakti, then it is of use. It is only waste of time. So he says, from this, one should not conclude that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has ordered us to discard Varnashrama Dharma. This is not what it means. If that would have been the case, then he would not have instructed all living entities through his pastimes of completely following the orders of Grihastha and Sannyas. He himself followed the Grihastha Ashram. He instructed many devotees to follow the Grihastha Ashram. He himself took up to Sannyas. So if he wanted the whole system of Varnashrama to be discarded wholesale, then he himself would have shown it through his example. But he didn't do that. He did accept in the beginning Grihastha Ashrama and followed the principles nicely. And he also accepted Sannyas Ashrama and followed the principles nicely. So as long as one has a material body, the system of Varnashrama Dharma must be followed, but it should remain under the full control and domination of bhakti. This is the most important thing. So one has to follow Varnashrama Dharma, means one should carefully choose occupations which are favorable and a social order, because these two are favorable for bhakti. Okay? But that choice should remain under the full control and domination of bhakti. So these are very strong terms that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is using. Full control and domination. Okay. So that is the main thing. So that kind of Varnashram is okay, which is under the full control and domination of bhakti. So what does it mean to be under full control and domination of bhakti? It means Varnashrama aspects accepted in the mood of Anukulyasya Sankalpo. You know, if favorable for bhakti, I will accept. With that mood, when you accept some aspects of Varnashrama, then earlier Bhaktivinoda Thakur had already mentioned, then those activities are no longer Varnashrama activities. They are called as secondary limbs of bhakti. Okay. They are called as secondary limbs of bhakti. So Varnashrama Dharma is like the function of one's supreme occupational duty. In a sense, it is favorable. So, foundation should not be seen as causal. If you say Varnashram Dharma or Varnashram system is non-negotiable prerequisite for bhakti, then that kind of a bhakti is not ahaituki bhakti. It is causeless. Okay. So, here foundational does not mean causal. Here, foundational means it can act as a good foundation. That's what it means. So one should not say that it is impossible to start practicing bhakti without this foundation of Varnashrama. No, that is not what it means. Because if that is what it would mean, then it would directly contradict what Srila Rupa Goswami has mentioned. So that's, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur would never contradict Srila Rupa Goswami in such an important point. So when one's supreme occupational duty is matured, which means when one reaches the stage of bhava and one achieves his goal, then the process is gradually neglected. Again abandoned at the time of death. Okay. So this is what he says. So certain aspects of Varnashrama in terms of the social order, in terms of the occupation, which may be nicely dovetailed in the path of bhakti, should be accepted. But it should be completely under, it should be under the full control and domination of bhakti and not actually independent of it. It should have the value system of bhakti. Some aspects of varnashram may be accepted through the value system of bhakti, and that will make those limbs of varnashrama as secondary limbs of devotional service. The secondary limbs of devotional service means any activity which is performed to aid or to facilitate the practice of the primary limbs, either for oneself or for the society or for one's family members. If you accept, if you perform certain activities, or if you accept certain occupations or some social setup, so that the primary limbs of Shravanam, Dhanam, etc. can be favorably performed both individually and as a society, then those activities are called as secondary limbs of bhakti, even though they may actually be part of Varnashrama. But because they have, those activities have been accepted in the mood of facilitating primary limbs of bhakti, therefore, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that they should be considered to be secondary limbs of bhakti only. Okay. Any discussion points, comments, questions on this? Okay, so if there are, okay, there is one hand up. Yes, Radha Pramod.
I think this is one of the best explanation we can give, I felt, bro. This is a very nice way of understanding. Till now, whatever you have explained, that the Varnashram word, you understand in a different way. And based on the context and what Rupa Goswami is telling, how Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not contradicting Rupa Goswami. And now it makes actually sense. And whenever Prabhupada made any statement of Varnashrama, what he is meaning, and whenever he said that, what you said in the morning with Tamal Krishna Maharaj's conversation with Prabhupada also, what he meant, and that also makes everything clear. When you understand the meaning of Varnashrama in different levels.
Context, yeah.
So that actually makes a great difference in understanding. There is no contradiction between the acharyas. Prabhupada or Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Rupa Goswami, whenever they are telling about Varnashrama, we have to know what is the context and accordingly you have to analyze it.
Correct.
So nice. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Yes, Madhai.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Yeah, I just needed some repetition and clarification. So you gave, can you repeat your definition of value system? Is it basically faith, what one's faith is?
Value system means what is the basis of accepting or rejecting something. Uh-huh. You know, what is the basis of accepting or rejecting something? So, which is on the platform the basis, of karma, the basis of accepting something is they will accept whatever is favorable for according to their engines, of according to the karma shastras, which say Brahmana should accept this, they will accept. It is imperative for a Brahmana to reject this, they will reject. But even though, but when it comes to bhakti, the wisdom is, oh, is that occupation favorable for devotional service? We will accept. So even though, it may be the same patient, you know, teaching may be the occupation which one may accept, which is recommended by the Dharma Shastras for Mana, and the same teaching may happen to be favorable for the also. But if one accepts the occupational duty of teaching because it is favorable for bhakti, then that occupational duty of teaching becomes a secondary limb of devotional service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that is the value system. So value system means on what basis you accept and reject, your choice, on what basis you make choice. That is the value system.
Yeah, and that basis comes down to your faith, actually, isn't it?
Correct, correct, exactly. It boils down to your faith.
Uh-huh. Okay, and of course, the primary limbs.
Your voice is breaking. Is it breaking just for me, or is it breaking for others also?
No, it's probably for everybody because I'm in the hills.
Okay.
I'm driving. So the primary limbs, of course, are those 64, I was saying, uh-huh. Right?
Correct, yeah. correct.
Okay. And then another thing was when it comes to the rituals, right? Uh-huh. When you mention rituals, which are of Varna. What did you say about rituals that
your they don't apply at all completely
to, no, I don't think you would. Oh boy. Yeah. I was trying to understand what you were saying about rituals.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and the bhakti yogi's attitude toward rituals, how are you explaining?
Like, for example, for the brahmanas and others, have to do 3 times sandhya, sandhya vandana prayers, and there are particular sacrifices, fire sacrifices, these things, that things, which have been recommended for different varnas and different ashramas. So we may not accept those rituals, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that we don't accept.
Okay. Yeah.
Those fall completely under the platform of karma. They are not. They cannot be dovetailed. Those rituals cannot be dovetailed. Occupations can be dovetailed. Social orders can be dovetailed, but rituals cannot be dovetailed.
Well, certain rituals are supportive, right? Are secondary limbs.
If they are dovetailable in Krishna consciousness, if they have some utility in Krishna consciousness, then they become secondary limbs.
Yeah.
Utility, then they cannot be accepted as secondary limbs.
Okay, last point is that Bhaktivinoda says that Varnashrama, absolutely, it has to be done. But when he says that, he's only saying that if it can be utilized as a secondary limb, yes, not otherwise. Exactly.
Not otherwise, no.
Yeah. And when he says that it does not have to be done, is what he means is that devotional service accrue any karma for that. So in that sense, he means, right?
And okay. also we do not accept the value system of Varnashrama. Because what defines Varnashrama is not just activities, but the mood with which the choice of activities, choice of actions are made. So that basis of choice, we don't accept that. The whole belief system of Varnashrama we reject. We are.
Yes.
We, that's what it means.
Yeah, when the value system of Varnashram is for some material benefit or for impersonal liberation, that we don't accept.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for this.
Hare Krishna. Okay, so I think we will pause here. We are already over time. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. We will continue this discussion further next Wednesday. So, next Wednesday is Jagannath Mishra Festival. Let me confirm. Generally, is Jagannath Mishra Festival is generally celebrated in the afternoon, right? Afternoon, there is a feast. There is, I think, fasting till noon and then the feast in the afternoon. And generally, evenings, you don't have any festivals, right? Can someone confirm what is the general practice in your temples? What is the practice for Jagannath Mishra Festival? Generally, the festivities end in the afternoon, right? Is it right? Can someone help me with that? Yeah, afternoon. Okay. So if that is the case, then most likely next Wednesday we will have our Bhakti Aloka session. I will confirm. But most likely on Monday and Tuesday, for those of you who may be attending Jaiva Dharma, this time I think both on Monday and Tuesday, because may you all absorb yourself in Gaur Katha, hearing pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We will not disturb that mood. So Saturday, Sunday, Monday and Tuesday, it's all for you to hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So we will not have our, except for Monday morning Bhagavatam class, we will not have any other classes. On Monday, no other class we'll have. Monday morning Bhagavatam class alone we will have. Tuesday morning, you will have Chaitanya Charitamrita class by Radha Pramod Prabhu, like we had for Nityananda Trayodashi. So, but other than that, the rest of the day, you are free to hear, absorb yourself in hearing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes or reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, whatever pleases you may do. So, we will have only morning Bhagavatam class on Monday. The rest of the day is for you to engage yourself. Tuesday also is fully free for you. And Wednesday also, I will let you know, depending on whatever is the function, we may have morning Bhagavatam class or we may not have. I will keep you posted on that. So thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vinod Thakur Pad ki jai, Sri Bhakti Aloka ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.